ॐ ज्ञानतिमरन्दस्य ज्ञानञ्जनशलाकय तक्षुन्मृतं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरुवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टम् आपितं येन भूतले अयं रूपाकृदामायं ददाति सपदान्तिकम्. वंशकौपातुर्यश्च कृपासिन्धुभयैव च पतितानं भावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः. श्रीकृष्णचैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्रियाद्वैतागदाधर श्रीवासदि गौरभक्तवृन्द. हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो हरे रामो राम राम हरे हरे. So greetings from the Sant Falls, kind of a small burgeoning spiritual community. I'm appreciating it more and more as I'm seeing so many people coming closer to Krishna consciousness by the friendships and association that people have had over the years. So it's really nice here. I spend a lot of my days preparing various seminars that I'm giving. Somehow or other, I was invited to the Boston Yoga and Chant Festival, which is quite a prominent Radhanath Swami will be there, Sham Das, and all these famous kirtaneers. And I was given a very humble spot. I'm going to write them back tomorrow. Sunday at 10 a.m. on the 19th. I'll be speaking there. I have an hour. And deciding what to do. Thinking maybe bring my drama, The Monk and the Thespian. I have to speak to Alex about that. And tomorrow, looking forward to it a lot, I'm doing the Bhakti story with Kirtan, and I'm fortunate that Achyuta Gopi is going to do the Kirtan. So that's kind of exciting. And this may be a regular feature, may develop out of it. I could see that. So what I'm going to do today, and what I'm going to do today is, excuse me, kind of give a preview of that program. Seem to be losing my voice a little bit here, so I'm going to do a preview of that program, excuse me. I've been using these classes to do that, and it's I think people enjoy it, and it's also effective for me to. It's kind of effective for me to prepare. So, first thing I'm going to do with the people is I'm going to ask him, what is the relationship between bhakti and kirtan? And then I'm going to explain that there are 9 processes of devotional service: chanting, hearing, meditation, humble service, worship of the deity, heartfelt prayers, adopting the mood of a servant, adopting the mood of a friend, and complete Atman Vedam, giving everything. Of those nine, three are the best. Shravanam, Kirtam, Vishnu, Smaranam, to chant, to hear, and to meditate on the Lord, on the divine. But of all kirtan, wow, something's really wrong here. Of all kirtan, the kirtan that is the best is the kirtan that's done of one's beloved Lord. It's kirtan done with a sense of sambandha or relationship. Which the pleasure in kirtan is the love, devotion that it invokes from the heart. And devotion is most intense. And the absorption in the object and name of your devotion is most intense, the most intense when you have relationship. Just like a Chuta Gopi. Why is she such a great kirtanier? Because she has a voice and a soul like Aretha Franklin. Because she has a smile that reflects the purity of her heart. It's because she has a relationship with the name. She has a relationship with the name. And that relationship was cultivated from when she was very, very young. I think I heard that when her very, very wonderful and devotional mother, when Ananta and her were born, they were offered at the feet of Radha Govinda. Now, if I say Radha Govinda, the ecstasy comes out of her heart because there's relationship. So the stories, the bhakti stories, are meant to invoke that relationship. They're meant to transfer bhakti. Bhakti means a relationship. There's four items it's described. There's one verse in the Bhagavatam, it's described. The four most important items of devotional service are chanting, hearing, remembering, and doing dramas. Dramas, poetry. There's such a rich culture of drama and poetry. And the stories are drama. The stories are why? Because it's a process of developing a deeper sense of mood and heart and devotion. And that doesn't come just from philosophy, Buddha, Bhava, Samavita. Yes, it does. But it's translated in that way. And the fruit of Swadhyaya, what is Swadhyaya's study? It means two things. It means to study the sacred text, and it means to chant mantras. But why? Because what's the fruit of studying sacred texts? What's the fruit of hearing these sacred texts? What's the fruit of hearing these stories? It develops a sense of your Ishtadev and the name of that Ishtadev. Ishtadev means your worshipable Lord, your relationship. So therefore, traditionally, there's an interchange of bhakti and kirtan, of bhakti stories and kirtan. Because it creates rasa. And what is rasa? Rasa is the flavor of devotion when it's heightened to the highest degree. And that's what these dramas and stories do. That's their purpose. So today, because I also when I do it, I want to make clear that I don't want to. Kirtan is the main thing. Kirtan is the main absorption. And whenever there's kirtan, I'm humble and terse with my words. So I'm going to tell a story. I call it the Bhakti story, and you'll see why. It begins with a king. He's the emperor of the world. And it's the last day of his life. And he's sitting on the bank of the Ganga, surrounded by all the sages, the spiritual all-stars of the world, would come to assist him in his final journey. Now, the king had been cursed 7 days previously to die in 7 days. It was his last day. The king was on an expedition. They often do it. I don't know if it was hunting or whatever his expedition was, but somehow or other, in a long and arduous day, he was extremely thirsty. And he went into the simple hermitage of a sage. And normally, even if someone's poor, the culture in India, Titi Bhagavan, the guest is God. You give him a glass of water. You offer him a seat. But nothing was offered. And the king became insulted. Of course, the sage was in samadhi, so he was not cognizant of anything outside. So the king, inexplicably, because he was actually the emblem of devotion, this must have been the will of the divine for some higher purpose. He goes outside. As he goes outside, to the right, he sees this dead snake. He's so angry, he picks up the snake, goes inside, garlands the sage, Shamaka Rishi, and then goes home. When he gets home, and coolly, because he's actually saintly, he begins to repent. He thinks, oh my God, I've committed such a great offense. And on the bhakti path, it's very simple. Chanting, dancing, feasting. But what's hard is not committing offenses. Ahimsa, avoiding ahimsa, embracing ahimsa. So one is very, very sensitive. Even if someone is angry with you without cause, one seeks out that person. So the king was seeing himself like a clean glass of water sees any speck of dirt. The king, it's magnified in the pure heart. And then comes the news that he's been cursed to be bit in 7 days by the vicious snake bird. When the saintly king hears this, he says, Sadhu Mene. Sadhu, this is very, very good. Because I'm interested in my journey in this world in purifying my heart completely of anartha, those things which have no value to love and devotion to the nature of the soul. And let me go through this curse, let me go through this experience, because it will root out the aggression in my heart that causes me to offend others. and my goal is self-realization. It will also prevent me from doing anything in the future. And if I accept the reactions won't go to my family. So the king immediately walks to the north, goes on the bank of the Ganga, and all the great sages of the world assemble. And he asks a very, very profound question. What is the duty of a man who's about to die, and what should he not do? Of course, later this question is glorified as Vriya Neshite, that this is the most glorious question because this is about everyone. I was at Srila Prabhupada, my Guru Maharaj's, the last months of his life, and he looked at all his disciples and said, do not think this will not happen to you. We were only 20. That one who's intelligent, he sees that the fault in this existence is that I get old, I suffer disease, and I die. And if you don't solve those problems, you haven't solved the problems of life. So the king asked the question, what is the duty of a man who's about to die? What should he not do? At that moment, by divine providence, this stunningly handsome, practically naked, 16-year-old young man walks in, who is followed by women and children, who thinks he's a madman because he's practically not wearing any clothes. When the sages turn around and study his physiognomy, from his raised nose and highly placed ears, to his neck which slopes like a conch shell, to his arms which practically hang down to his knees, the soft pink reddishness in his lips and his cheeks and his palms and his swarthy, tall, dark, handsome complexion. They immediately recognize his father is there, who is Vyas, who edited all the Vedas. The guru of Vyas is there, Narada Muni, and they recognize him. And he sits on that seat. They're called Sukadev. One who speaks and realizes things so beautifully that even if a truth is spoken by him, it becomes even sweeter. Just like a parrot who cuts a mango, and that little slice in the mango in the fresh air ripens it to the... And he was such a detached person. He had no desire in this world. In fact, he stayed in his mother's womb for 14 years. When he finally came out, he just left home. And his father, who was a scholar and had Sanskrit students, called piteously. As his son left the forest, my son, as the echoes of the trees responded, my son. And then he sent his students out, and the students were looking in the forest, but they're studying their Sanskrit verses. And he heard the verse, Atmaramas Chamunayo Nigranant Apyuk, no. Tava katam ratam atta jivanam kavibir iditam kalmasapaham Shravana Mangalam. Sri Bharatitam Uvigananti Te Ye Bhuvida Tavakatam Ritam. This Amrita of the stories of Krishna. Tavakatam Ritam Tapta Jivanam are the life for those who are suffering in the world. It is described, transmitted by the greatest sages, and eradicates all sins, and it bestows good fortune upon all who hear them. And then he came back. Because he realized that these stories, even though he had no attachment, were completely spiritual. And he began to speak. And people who were watching it, they didn't just see someone speaking. They saw a river of nectar. As he began to explain the beautiful pastimes of Krishna and the philosophy of Krishna. And it's described that this nectarian flow went on for 7 days, and this king who was cursed because he was thirsty, he was not eating or drinking. He was so satisfied. Bibita Bhagavatam, Rasam Alayam, Bibita Bhagavatam. Drink, drink this Rasa Alayam, this tasty drink of nectar, of loving exchanges on the ultimate platform, and purify your heart and have that love manifest in your own heart. Nigama kalpa toro galitam palam sukamukad, from the mouth, sukamukad, from his mouth, amrita dravyatam, like rice pudding, like a smoothie. Amrita, drink this amrita, this deathless nectar. And after 7 days hearing this, he was fully fixed. And he was completely free from fear. Actually, the first thing that the Sukadev said to him, if you want to be fearless at the time of death, then drink, then chant here and remember the glorious pastimes of the divine. He was completely satisfied. The great king, his name is Maharaj Prickett. He's ready now to focus completely. He's already seeing that the transformations of the body and the mind are external to the self, and the transformation of the disintegration of the body creates an illusion of non-existence for the soul, but the soul is eternal. So he has no fear. He realizes eternality. That's what happens when you meditate in a pure spiritual way. You realize your eternality. You feel your eternality. So he begins to meditate. He's ready to fix his mind. He only has 4 hours to live, but he's not fearless. I've seen people who practice bhakti yoga completely fearless at the end of death. So one lady with cancer, it's a long story, but she was told, you have 1 hour left to live. She looked up and she said, this is intense. She just fixed her mind, the lotus feet of a Guru Maharaj. I remember it was at her side. She fixed herself on the holy name. And she smiled for her friends back in Los Angeles. Let them see the glories of this process. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak praniyate male samyak. Completely in yoga, chanting yoga, kirtan yoga. And many began to chant. And that's when I'll go to Achyuta, and then she'll begin to chant. So that's the first part of the story, and then hopefully she'll chant for a half hour. And then I'll start the second part. It's in three parts. And the second part is that he's just about, he's so fixed now. He's ready to go into the highest state of consciousness, Sandrandanabhishe, so fixed. At that moment, his mother comes. Now, for my frame of reference, I mean, if I was on that situation and my mother came and I was 4 hours left to live and I was getting fixed in samadhi, I would say to my mother, not now. And she wouldn't listen. She wouldn't listen. Not now. Not now. But he was so kind-hearted. He looked at his mother. His mother saw his soul. She became satisfied and expressed her real concern. And her real concern was, she wanted her son to share the nectar of realizations that he got with her. Because when you hear these narrations, it invokes a sense of your relationship with God. And he wanted to hear it. Because the Bhagavatam, the history is that it's the essence of the Vedas. We can't go into the whole story. There's a story and a story and a story and a story. But it's the commentary in the Vedanta Sutra, which is the codified conclusion, Vedanta, of the whole Vedas. And the Bhagavatam is the commentary by which you understand it. So it's the essence of the Vedas. He's heard the essence, Maharaj Prickett, and she wants to hear the essence of the essence. The essence of the essence. So Maharaj Prickett thinks, and he thinks to himself, actually, you know, now's the time that I should be silent. And he tells his mother with so much affection. Mother is first guru. Mother gives the mind. Mother nourishes the mind. Looks at the looks at mother and says, Prashna Madhuri, your prashna, your question is so sweet. It's so sweet. I'd be so happy to tell you the essence. What I just heard. And then he begins to narrate a story, which you can call the Bhakti story. It's called the Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Many things can be said about it. We'll just begin to tell that story as Marge Prickett told his mother. As Marge Prickett was deeply realized, he can communicate. What does communicate mean? It means you can take something in the form that you have heard it and make it relevant to someone who has a different frame of reference without changing the message. The problem with many religions is the charisma, the devotion, the spirit that was carried by their teacher was kept in a form that is no longer relevant for the mode of understanding of the people of the day. And therefore, what is compassion becomes hate. What is spiritual becomes material. What is liberating becomes oppressive. What is spontaneous becomes ritual. But he was liberated. He was realized. And he tells the whole Bhagavatam in such a sweet way, in another way. And he does it through the story of the great Saint Narada, who progressively searches the universe to find the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy. And that's the person with the greatest bhakti. That's the person with the greatest love and devotion. That's the person whose devotion has invoked a revelation and reciprocation of God, of God's ultimate beauty. So today, we can just tell a short part of that story. And it begins at the Kumbh Mela. Kumbh Mela happens at the tree Veni, where the three holiest rivers in India intersect. And at that place of intersection of the Saraswati, the Ganga, and the Jamuna, every 12 years, there's an astrological configuration of Aquarius, a Kumbha, where the nectar of immortality falls at that place. And everyone who is worth his weight in spirituality goes there. I went there maybe 36 years ago. I went in 1988. That's 23, 24 years ago. And I remember in the morning sleeping in a tent, kind of pretty comfortable, with like carpets in the floors. Actually quite nice, you'd see. And getting up in the morning and wrapping my blanket around me and walking to the holy river at 4 o'clock in the morning, in the middle of the winter, it's pretty cold, just in what's called copings. It's just two cloths of paper, strips of cloth that a sadhu keeps for his underwear. You may have seen those pictures, or that's what I was wearing. I took off the blanket and I jumped in that cold water in the morning and felt, I can't explain what I felt. Sometimes taking a holy bath in India, remember in Radhakund, I have going to bring some holy water. If anybody wants some, I'll give you. They took bath with the heaviest two people. They were Maharajas. They were the monks. And I remember sitting there and watching our false egos in puddles on the floor, the vrittis, the incessant chatter was gone. I was actually seeing soul to soul. And this way, I never forget. And I went to that kirtan, Mangal Artik, the morning kirtan, which is part of our sadhana or practice. I'm always up before sunrise. And I tilted my head to the side. Tilted my head to the side. And it was like there was a flow of nectar from the. And I remember one of the great kirtaniers in the Krishna movement, an Indian monk called Lokanath Swami. He was chanting, and I was turning my head to the side because I swore it wasn't coming from his mouth. It was coming from the heavens. So Maharaj Prickett is describing this scene at Kumbh Mela thousands of years ago, where all the sages are there, and they just had bathed, and then they looked at the deity form of the Lord, which is also for their sambandha or relationship. That's one worship. You worship these forms to develop this sense of relationship, devotion, bhakti. They were looking and gazing at the beautiful face of the deity and feeling completely satisfied in heart. Completely, like all satisfaction. Can you imagine feeling that? I'm completely satisfied. Has anybody had that experience? I am completely satisfied. There's nothing more I want because I'm feeling so much love in my heart. And what more can I want than that? And then they begin praising each other that you're the topmost recipient of Krishna's mercy. You're the greatest. Such a natural feeling when you have bhakti to be humble. In this world, we're trying to be the center and everyone else moving around our desires. But in the real highest spiritual consciousness, one worships everything else to the extent that one thinks, I am the only servant. Everyone is my master. At that moment, the great Saint Narada, and he travels around the world playing his vina and singing kirtan. That's all he does. And this Narada, sees this beautiful, elderly Brahmin, very fixed, first class. He's the guru of the area. He's surrounded by many, many subordinates. He's obviously very richly endowed. And he is completely pure. You can see it in his face. He moves by prema or love, not by kama or lust. Every movement. I remember when I first saw my guru in Kennedy Airport, 1971. He just waved his hand and I saw it's moving out of prema. It's moving out of love. And he was Mahamani. He was very generous. Immediately began to feed everybody. And then he began his worship of his deities, his Panchanga, worship doesn't just mean worship. It begins with how you approach the temple, how you're clean internally and externally. You wake up, you chant prayers, you purify the ground of old things. It begins from the moment you wake up. Deity worship regulates one in a very pure way. And then he, upadanam, second thing, he gathers articles for worship, offering the best. Because love means beauty, because when you have love, you want to offer the best. So really, this type of worship, it's ritual, but it's the ritual of how to move yourself out of the center and put God in there. It's the ritual on how you move yourself in a position to feel and receive love. And then there's yoga in worship, the third part. He hasn't even begun to worship. And what is yoga? You establish yourself in a spiritual identity. Naham vi pranachadapatir vaishno. I'm not a Brahmin. I'm not a Sudra. I'm not anything. I'm not a sannyasi. I'm not a woman. I'm not a man. Gopi Bhartu Padakamala, some type of establishing. And then the worship. He builds a handsome altar with mud. And puts a canopy and takes out a golden throne. And with joy and love begins to worship. As an honorable guest, he offers things to the wash the feet, the scent, the food, the clothes. And then Artik. Yeah, Artik. Artik comes from Artrika, a lamp in the night. You greet the guest. It's very personal. At first you offer different items. And then Swadhyaya. After deity worship, there's the cultivation of devotional service, self-study, and the practice. And therefore, he begins a one-man festival. And he's singing and playing music and singing from his heart. Boom. And then she'll do kirtan again. And then, after she finishes the kirtan, then I'll describe what happens after the worship. And Narada is watching this. And he's seeing someone who's completely in the mood of seva, seva bhav. Seva means service. What you want, I will do. Thinking of others before oneself. So he offers respect to all the pandits and the and then he honors the devotees who are Krishna Kirtana Nanda Lapita. Who are these greedy to enjoy glorifying Krishna? And he washes their feet, he puts water and pleasant words, he bows down, and then he feeds everyone else, including the outcasts, the dogs, the jackals, and after satisfying everyone else, and declaring that everything I worship, I offer back to the Lord. I don't want anything from this. If you perform activity and you want something from it, it's not bhakti or love. Love is susukam kartam. It's a happy process. Why? Because you're not doing it for any goal, jnana, vairagya. You perform austerities to get moksha. The activity is just pain. What you want is at the end. In karma, you do sacrifices to get some result. But in bhakti or devotion, the activity is satisfying in itself. So he has no motive. He wants nothing. It's love. You really love God. If you really love others, then you don't care what happens. Asri Shiva Padaratam Panastumam Madarshanam Mamahatam Karotuva. You may make me brokenhearted by not being before me. You may crush me by your embrace. I don't care. You're my Lord, birth after birth. And then he puts the deity to rest and goes home, and Narada says, this is the most dear devotee, and this is the recipient of Krishna's money. And greedy in devotion, he runs and says, you are the best because you have so many assets. And instead of enjoying them selfishly, you offer them to God and others. But when you're humble and you focus your mind on the divine absolute reality, you focus your mind on the infinite, you realize your insignificance. But you realize your worth is part of the infinite. And the ecstasy of love increases unlimitedly in your heart. So the Brahmin could not see, nor did he want to be praised. He did not want to take him out of the position where mercy is felt to the maximum degree. Mercy flows down to the lowest position. The person who's proud, who has sense of entitlement, never feels any, never feels any love. And he says, what mercy do you see in me? Who am I but the most wretched person? What opulence do I have? I'm an insignificant person, a mere spark of God's splendor. I've left the Creator, and I have relative influence among others. It's nothing. He points to someone higher. That's the Brihadmanarada's search. He meets every great devotee. And you see every great devotee in the bhakti story through three perspectives. The vision of what Narada is seeing. No, from the previous person who says, oh, you should go see him, he's so great. The Narada sees him, and you see by the person's reaction of humility. And it finally winds up in Braj. I'm kind of tired. The story will finish there. Anybody like to say hello? I really need someone to say hello to know that I haven't been talking to
hello
myself.
Hello again, Maharaj. Hello again.
That's Gail.
It's me.
Okay. Now I need someone else to say hello, so I know I just wasn't speaking to Gail.
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj, this is Raj Radhe.
Okay, these are the regulars. That's great. Also, on Sunday, at Kam Kula Yoga, in Tom's Rivers at 1 o'clock, I'm giving this lecture, The Yoga of Forgiveness. Anybody else like to say hello today? I appreciate to hear one more voice today. I kind of know there's more because I get the list, but someone seems they're trying. Someone else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, this is Sue
Devi. Hey, Sue Devi, great. Wednesday also, great.
Yeah, this is Hillary.
That's Hillary?
Yes, she's here.
I'm here too.
Oh, I hear really well. Thank you for coming on, Sudevi. This is what I'm going to be doing tomorrow with Achyuta Gopi. So I'm kind of excited. The audience is very primed for this, I hope. So
wonderful.
Well, thank you both, Sudevi and Hillary. I really appreciate that you're listening. What time is it there?
Up in the morning, Maharaj.
What's that?
It's 3 a.m.
What time?
3 a.m. 3 in the morning.
Okay, it's early in the morning. Well, thank you. Thank you. I hope it's a good start for the morning.
It's great. Thank you, Maharaj.
Now, I see by giving it, I have to work on the ending a little bit. But I hope it was absorbing people. They'll hear it. Okay. Well, thank you so much. Good. Good. Is this enlivening? People from Europe waking up early to listen. Thank you so much. I always appreciate that. Anybody else like to say hello? Then we can end. Radhe, Radhe. Hare Krishna.